You've waited long enough to release all the D&D episodes. I think you should edit them all and then drop them all on the same day. Have 8 hours of straight D&D episodes drop at the same time.
That's what I was probably going to end up doing, actually, is I've been chipping away. I have 2 of the 5 total segments edited. Mm-hmm. And then I was, when we're done with the whole thing, I was going to put the campaign in one big, like, 12-hour-long YouTube video. Because I figured it would be, I don't know, for the lulls.
Weird.
Totally useless.
You should definitely drop it as different sections, too.
Well, yeah, no. Yeah, okay. For sure. Just, I was just considering it. I was going to dump all the ones I had at once and then also do a super cut of the whole thing, which will take me years. But, you know, it'll be totally pointless. But, you know, if we had any watchers, it would be good for watch time. You know, minutes watched of our junk.
I also need you to tell me when I can definitely empty my recycling bin, because I've saved 2 or 3 episodes lately. Hey, do you have that recording from 2 months ago? I hope so.
Pretty confident I have everything now. At least the versions of things that I need. Pretty sure. I think. To be fair, the last one I asked for wasn't on me. You didn't send it at all. It was on me for not catching it for like a month. That one's going up on Monday.
That's good.
Yeah, I know. Finally. Buy a comic that might cost more than a dime. Come meet the brothers who are here to waste your time. You know what else finally happened?
Colin recorded with us last week.
I mean, yeah, that happens once a month, but yeah. I was going to say the X-Men movies finally ended.
Oh, well,
for us, sort of. For now.
Yeah.
Sort of.
The X-Men trilogy. The OG trilogy.
Yeah. That was a thud.
It was fine.
It's fine.
All right. The opening stuffs, though. I'm Jacob. He's Spencer. We've been picking at the X-Men stuffs.
Yes, we have.
We watched X-Men 3.
Yeah. And
so, I was saying, I watched this trilogy when I was, like, 13, and I never went back. This is my second time viewing all these movies. The third one is still fine. Like, everybody hates on it too much. Like, yeah, it's not the greatest movie ever, but it's not painful to watch, either.
Like, no, but it's also really forgettable. Like,
yeah.
I haven't seen this in a few years, and I have no intention of rewatching this again. It just, like,
it's got so many threads of, like, well, that could have been something. That should have been something. Like, it's one of those
missed opportunities. Lots of them.
Sure, but that's not what I'm thinking. Headcanon. It's one of those headcanon movies where it's like, my headcanon is better than what we actually get.
Yes. For sure. It feels so long, and it's barely an hour and a half.
I definitely remember that, and it's 1:44.
Yeah, and, like, it feels like 2.5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Very long and drawn out, and I think part of that is because between sequences of either action sequences or people talking, the scenery, when it's like, wow, in a normal movie, we would show some, like, surrounding shots, and it's like, this looks like shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the so much of it...
There's a lot of green screen.
There's a lot of soundstage, and a lot of the visuals, like, landscape stuff just looks like crap.
Yes.
Like, either because it's digital or because it's just shot really poorly, and a lot of it's color graded really badly. Like, it looks sour. Like, I like the early 2000s oversaturated visual sometimes. I have a liking for Scream 4, you know? Like, sometimes that works. This just looks like they cooked it, you mm-hmm. know?
It's baked.
Yeah, but not in a good way.
Nope.
Yeah.
The costumes are incredible through this whole movie.
I wouldn't go that far. I'd say they're definitely better.
I like the costumes in this movie.
They're all right. What's his name?
Magneto.
No, I mean, Magneto always looks fine. The actor.
He had to drip.
He does. The actor who played Beast.
Kelsey Grammer.
There we go. Yeah. He think is like the what kind of the most wasted potential in this movie, because he's the only one kind of pulling any weight with some level of gravitas other than Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart, and it's like they didn't really do anything with him. He's just kind of there. Yep. And, like, he's doing well. The costume in that department is fantastic. I really do like that. Okay, the X-Men costumes are fine, but, like, the Brotherhood looks like shit. So, to contrast that, yeah. Juggernaut looks like crap. All the other mutants are like, wow, look, black leather and, like, thongs yeah. and fishnets.
Nah, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
I was thinking all the X-Men costumes.
Yeah. The team's, like, fine. I don't know. I think Storm being somehow such a focus on this movie because Halle Berry was such a big pull for them, like, to market it, but they do nothing interesting with her.
Again.
Yeah, for the third time in a row, where she's just there, but she takes up so much screen time that it's very off-putting.
I really wish... I'm not on the bandwagon of, like, oh, wow, 20th Century Fox is dead, and we need the MCU to bring in the mutants. I'm not behind all that. I like giving it a minute to breathe, but I kind of wish they would bring Aurora in just as her own thing and actually give her some character growth.
Like, I agree.
Throw her in Black Panther 3 or whatever and do something cool.
I agree. I think that they probably will. And I think that would be a very advisable path because she's one of the characters in the comics that has the most development outside of, like, the team dynamic.
Right, exactly.
It's like Wolverine and Deadpool obviously are over doing their own stuff. And then you have, yeah, it's like Storm. Like, usually is the next one in the list of, like, most popular X-Men characters.
Right.
And, yeah, I agree. I think that would be good. Especially because she just got cut so dirty multiple times in this whole franchise. Including the next time around with a different actor. It's still nothing.
Oof.
Yeesh. Just very blah. Scott's death reeks of scheduling conflicts. And bad writing. But
apparently,
like,
there was a lot of that.
Yeah, I mean, this movie went through development hell. Like, it had a bad turnaround time, and that's why, in addition to Bryan Singer being Bryan Singer and being a shithead, like, they just had to crank the movie out really fast for a bunch of budgetary permits and crap.
Mystique gets narked by the anti-X-Men drug.
Yeah. Just very... Mm-hmm. It just doesn't tie in well with anything. Like, the previous two have flaws, but they work pretty well together. And two is a good, like, evolution on one. Like, there's more, it's mostly better. But, like, this is just, like, kind of a regression. And it's also just, it just feels anticlimactic. Because a lot of the material here could have been spent way better with any other creative team or... better circumstances, and they kind of cram, like, it all in.
Too much at the same time. You got the anti-drug, you had what was supposed to be Dark Phoenix, but really isn't.
Yeah.
You got that.
It's Jean having a temper tantrum. The death of Charles Xavier.
Yep.
The death of Scott Summers, both of which have happened multiple times.
Yep.
There's so much. And then, yeah, the whole movie is like, by the way, Wolverine is going to be the guy. And it's like, even Hugh Jackman has nothing to do in this movie. Like, dramatically speaking,
he talks Jean Grey down. Hey,
so
Jean, stop it.
Yeah, like even like the pearl in the clamshell of this whole franchise, even he's just kind of like here.
Yeah.
Just very meh.
So the typical progression, the pathway to Logan. Doesn't explain Professor X coming back, does it?
What do you mean?
So you got these three, and you got X-Men... Nope. The freaking The Wolverine. And then Logan, right? Like...
Okay. Nobody knows, because none of these movies communicate with each other.
Okay.
But Days of Future Past...
Oh, right.
Was it kind of re-brought back the old continuity... Originally, First Class was supposed to just be a prequel. It wasn't a reboot prequel. It was just, this happened, by the way.
Okay.
But that, none of it matches up because nobody gave a shit to check the details. And then Days of Future Past is like, but what if we smush them into one thing? And then if you really want to go for it, then Logan happens after that. But, like, nobody cares.
Hmm.
Just, exactly. Just pretend this movie didn't happen because nothing in here is...
It seems like everybody pretends this movie doesn't happen.
Pretty much. Like...
The X-Men movies are so...
Yes. Very hit or miss.
I don't like them.
Not really. No. Not a huge fan. I did.
Even, like, X2, which you raved about, I was like, this is fine. It's an X-Men movie. Like, this is the peak that it offers? Meh.
I just really hope that they get a good creative team behind it next time around, because they really need a good win on this front. Like, botching this again would be very bad.
Yep.
Just especially because it's going to have to take another 10, 15 years to reintroduce the characters yet again, and then nobody's going to care by then. It's a shame, especially because the comics have been going off so well for the past few years.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, oh, cool, there's a lot of new material to pull from. Are they going to? Probably not.
Nah.
Nah. But what if we put in the X-Men 97 theme song?
Let's do the big scary robots again.
Da-na-na-na-na-na-na. Yeah, just... Ugh. Yeah, this movie's just boring.
Quite.
It's not even infuriating. Like, at least, like, Apocalypse is also kind of boring because there's so much going on and it's all so bleh. But, like... I don't know, man. This is like bottom three on out of the other. Origins Wolverine is a special place in hell, but like it's like X3 and like Apocalypse and Dark Phoenix are like right in the same neck of the woods.
Yeesh. I think Dark Phoenix is the bottom, and then Apocalypse, and then X3. Working my way up, honestly.
I guess. First Class, though.
I've finished this one a couple times, and the other two I haven't.
I guess. That's a barometer. You also fall asleep watching anything.
No, this is a different kind of fall asleep. This is like me on the couch trying to watch this movie instead of going to bed trying to fall asleep.
Mm-hmm. But First Class, though.
Apocalypse looks cool. Dark Phoenix is just straight up boring. There's nothing
See.
There's nothing to hear.
I think the thing with that one that I kind of latched on to was the fact that it was Simon Kinberg's directorial debut, and he was really trying to hamper on all the emotional stuff. It just isn't good. Like, it felt like he was trying, like, behind the camera, like, the amount of scenes where it's like, and all the characters are going to get and sit in a room and they're going to talk about their feelings was like, this is bad, but you were thinking it just didn't work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. There's at least some of it. This just feels kind of soulless.
Are you saying First Class is next?
I need a break for a long time.
Oh, come back.
I need a break. Hey, we're gonna be... The next few movies are Punisher movies.
Okay.
So it's at least bad, but gore. So, there's bad guns.
Yeah, yeah.
That'll be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I liked War Journal, I think. That was the weird one.
Warzone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's the third... Whatever.
I think so.
We'll get to that one.
I watched it. It was like, holy crap, this actually isn't bad.
Yeah. We'll get to it.
All right.
Those are the next ones on the list. I got to take a break from the X-Men. I love Hugh Jackman's face. I need a break from it, though.
Okay. And Move. Then he sings a song.
Yeah. I need to go watch him sing a silly little diddle. I need him to sing in Deadpool 3.
A silly little diddle?
I think that word works in that context.
I don't think so.
He's gonna do...
You're talking about Les Miserables, whatever, the French one, right?
No. I mean, he just sings in general, because he's a theater guy. Deadpool 3, he needs to sing a song. I'm just saying. Take full advantage of his talents. Have him do Singing in the Rain. I don't know.
A silly little diddle connected to Les Miserables.
I don't know. That movie was also bad.
Was it?
It sucks because it was like, I don't hate musicals, but it was a bad musical. Not because the music was bad, but because they recorded all the audio live on set. So they're doing the acting, but like they're also singing while they're like crying and pissing and shitting themselves. So it sounds like shit.
Hmm.
Like Anne Hathaway got like an award nom for that. And it's like, The acting is great. The singing is crap because they record, like, they're like, yeah, by the way, while you're sitting here, like conjuring snot and crying, also sing into the microphone. So it sounds like shit. Like, you don't make musicals like that.
Weird.
It was very bad, which is a shame because it looks good and the casting is great, but like music is bad. And like, that's
strange.
The spine of the movie.
Yeah.
Dumb.
I don't know.
You know what's not dumb?
I don't know that story at all. French people are miserable.
I do like watching Les Mis, though. Like, that's a good play. It's a very good story.
Okay.
Sometimes I go to local theater because I don't have a life.
There's a word for that. Hipster.
Yeah. Probably.
I wear my scarf and I bring my chai latte to the local theater.
I do.
I know.
And then I drink a rosé afterwards.
And then I go home and I light up my pumpkin spice candle.
Yes. You know what's not bad, though? What's quite good, in fact.
Elio's Pizza.
No, that stuff is disgusting. Elio's is disgusting. I'd rather be hungry than eat Elio's. That stuff is revolting. I'd rather eat, like, lunchroom pizza.
You'd rather eat Lunchables?
Yeah, actually. At least those are real crackers. Immortal Thor, number 3.
Oh, right.
So Thor does a big nap and gets trapped in Sleepland, basically. The entire issue is Thor trying to escape from a spell relocation hex thingy that Loki did. I really like this issue.
And the reason why he's there is Loki wanted to teach him a lesson.
I actually kind of liked that. I liked how the... It wasn't just that, because also he has now done the Odin sleep, but they didn't waste any time. So, like, because when he gets out of Dreamland, basically, he's like, I'm already ramped and ready to go, and yet no time has passed. And it's like, that's actually kind of a... It's like that old Halo Combat Evolved trick where you can reload the gun that's in your backpack.
Yeah.
If you time it right.
Yeah.
It's like that. It's like, oh, wow. Instead of... I take my millennia-long nap in the middle of a crisis. I can go bye-bye into Dreamland. I don't know. I thought that was neat.
It was kind of... This felt like a single issue. As in, like, Loki does a fun trick to Thor.
Yeah.
And it's cool. I like it. It's...
Axe.
Like you said, it does that thing with the sleep, but also it gives Thor his other weapon. Which he's probably going to give away, I'm sure.
Probably. Beta Ray Bill 2.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I thought the jokes in this one were actually really funny. Like, Thor's, like, trying to shave, and then Loki comes in and is like, no, don't cut your throat. Yep. Don't kill yourself. I got a good chuckles out of it. It looks fan-fucking-tastic, yep. Especially. The weird dream illusion looks really trippy. Mushrooms and stuff.
Now what, though? He kept... Ugh. Thor was all, like, the freaking outer god is still in the negative zone, and he's gonna come back all pissed off, and I gotta kill him. But I don't think we're gonna get that immediately. I think we're gonna get edged on that a little bit longer.
Oh, probably. That'll be, like, 2 more issues.
Yeah.
But, it does end with, he's going to go consult Storm. Speaking of introducing Storm into other non-X-Men properties.
Exactly.
I think that will be nice. Good crossover issue.
That was what gave me that thought. Was,
I had a feeling.
Was Thor and also reading the Black Panther comics. She's huge in that. And it's, yes, like, why is this not in the movies? Like,
shh. That would require them to be creative.
Not just an X-Man.
Nah.
We're going to leave her in a group of people because she makes it rain sometimes. But yep. Also, she makes it sunny sometimes.
True.
And yeah. There's the one time where she makes it snow.
Mm. So I checked the first trade or collected edition for this run is the first 5 issues and annual 1. So I figure that would be the good spot to stop.
Good stop.
Yeah, that's how they've broken it up. So that's a couple more months.
So we got to find something else.
I mean, we can. Mm. Oh, fucking no. That gives us like 3 more months, though.
Have you looked up Vicious Circle 3? It's like Vicious Circle 2.
That was like 9 months.
I know.
We did that like 5 minutes ago. So it's probably 2025 at this rate.
Okay.
I have no idea. But yeah, so we still have like 3 months.
Okay.
So, cool. Yeah, we'll be like, wow. Oh my gosh. And he was so good. And oh my gosh. And then he kills it. And then you go, oh. And then we'll pick another one.
Colin, shut up. It'll be the same, the perfect timing. It'll be great.
True.
No, I don't read comics. I just talk to microphones.
That's true. I'm kind of impressed that he doesn't, like, just record. Like, he would be the guy to, like, do audio journals like a movie protagonist.
Uh-huh.
I'm kind of impressed he doesn't.
He probably does. He puts it on cassette tape.
But if he did, he wouldn't be able to resist showing us, so he would have told us by now. He would have been like, guys, look at this thing I started doing.
He makes Abby listen to it, so that's why told us.
That's probably true. What do you got? What you been reading? Book boy?
That was violent.
Just wait until I miss by a little bit.
I read Black Science Volume 1, How to Fall Forever, written by Rick Remender and illustrated by Matteo Scalera.
Hot.
And basically, a group of scientists, like the Fantastic Four, are on an adventure, and it's kind of like the opening of Star Trek Into Darkness. They're on some crazy-ass planet getting chased down and killed, and they gotta jump away, and everybody's dying, and they jump away, and it's the wrong jump, and this book starts at 100 miles an hour, and then it kind of slows down to fill in the backstory, but I'm going to blame the writing. The art looks really good. The worlds and the alien races and everything looks great. It was really hard to tell characters from other characters, like part of the science group. A dude's having an affair with a chick, and they're on this expedition, but I couldn't tell. I don't think his wife is there. He left her at home, but brought his kids.
Haven't they ever watched Alien? Never have sex in space.
No, they didn't. They had the sex in the office before they went to space.
Ew.
But I don't know. It was really hard to tell because there were a bunch of different characters, and like none of them are introduced. They're introduced through the backstory telling in the later issues. The science was cool. I guess the sci-fi was cool. The planet and time jumping and all that stuff. It just starts at such a breakneck speed. It's really hard to get your feet under you and understand what is actually happening right now. This trade had issues 1 through 6, and I gave it 3 stars. It just because I had a really hard time telling what was actually happening right now. Who's talking to who? There's a bunch more. I don't know how long this run actually goes.
Forever.
I hope not. Let me find out. I can find out very quickly. 43 issues.
Oof, that's a big boy.
So that's 9 trades, it looks like.
I think I saw an omnibus about this at some point, so that would make sense.
The library only had this first trade, and I don't know. I don't think I'll go back to it.
Rip.
It's fine. It's interesting. It's cool. It looks great, but it really feels like you have to read the whole run to understand what is actually happening. So...
Interesting, because that's the exact same thing you say about Al Ewing's Immortal Hulk. But you like that.
Yes.
Interesting.
His started out slow enough to be like, oh, Hulk. Hulk smash. I get it.
Hulk does smash.
Wait, there's another Hulk?
And he's madder.
Yeah. And he smashes more.
Mm.
So yeah, I got it from the library for free. Wow.
Mm.
In paper.
Ew, like a paper copy? Ew. What is this, the 20th century, you
yeah.
peasant?
Yeah.
Speaking of buying paper copies.
Literally the only comic book they had.
That's rough.
In paper.
God, it must have been donated or something.
Probably.
I read Shazam and the Monster Society of Evil. This is a really wacky book, actually. So it's made by Jeff Smith, who's the guy who makes Bone, the comic book graphic novel series that a lot of kids get into comics with.
Yeah.
I haven't read that in a very long time. I'm kind of meaning to go back to it. But yeah, so this is half of this is an original story and half of it's a retelling of the same story. The retelling is the same. It's a retelling of some Golden Age stories in Shazam's history. I don't have the issue numbers. Basically, it's about Billy Batson being a tiny boy. He's like 7 or something. He's very itty bitty. He's like an orphan on the streets, and he's homeless, and he lives in like an abandoned apartment complex or whatever. He gets the magic powers because, of course, he does, and they stop Dr. Savannah, who's like a military contractor guy. They also stop a bunch of big bug kaiju robot things because Mr. Mime is a snake iguana thing. It's weird. It's very, very Golden Age comics-y, and I like that. It made for a very good break of pace because I was reading a lot of not lighthearted books lately. And then this is like, and then the little kid turns into a big superhero and he punches the evil monsters. And I love that sometimes. The art works surprisingly well. Some of the faces are really wonky, but that's kind of his art style. Are you watching sportball?
It's college sportball.
Oh, college sportball. And it was definitely cutesy, I think is a good way to describe it. Very odd proportions and nothing logistically makes sense, but it's comics. Who gives a shit?
Kind of like the Big Hero 6 of caricatures.
I guess, sort of, yeah. It just definitely felt really well in touch with like Golden Age comics, which I haven't gone back to. Silver Age stuff is really hard to read, but a lot of the Golden Age stuff is pretty good. Some of it's really weird, but a lot of it is very... It's higher effort than you'd expect. When you think of old comics and you're thinking of like Silver Age stuff, you're thinking of mostly dog shit. But like the really early stuff is definitely from a different time, but a lot of it's just really good in general. So it was nice to get like a modern update to that. So it's more, the pages are shiny and it's in color, but it's got that same tone to it.
Is Shazam going to be your next hyper focus after Doctor Strange or Ghost Rider?
No. Ghost Rider's always been my hyper-focus.
I know.
No.
You're almost done with him.
No. I got a billion more Ghost Rider things. Jeez, there's so much.
I thought you were almost done with one of them.
Yeah, one of them. No. I just read Shazam whenever I can pick one up. I've read, like, maybe a third of it. Wow. Not the before it was owned by DC stuff. Like, the really old stuff. I haven't gotten into that. I've read a lot of the more recent stuff. That was really all I got. I bought this for $4 at Savers, which is a local thrift shop chain, sort of.
I've never been in there. Wait, you were flirting with the staff, weren't you? You were.
No, I wasn't actually. Not yet. I bought this like 2 months ago.
Oh, okay.
For context, my girlfriend works there. but no, she didn't work there yet. So no, I just found this on my own.
Dang.
It's always worth trying out like thrift shops for comics. You can even just regular books, because then you'll get a hardcover $40 book for like $3.
I found a thick ass Hulk book that doesn't look very good, but it was like ripped down the middle. It was $3. And I haven't read it yet.
That's super like weird.
Hulk versus Red Hulk or something. It was pretty thick, but it was $3 because of a bad rip.
Yeah. It's always worth swooping in. And this one was in like basically right off the shelf condition. Like
nice.
They're books, you know, when you get, it's not like it's a new in box, you know, like when you go to GameStop and then you get mad that they took the new game out of the game case, like it comes sealed, it should stay sealed.
Yes.
But books are books, and most books aren't like wrapped up or anything. So it's like,
the Goodwills and the Savers are good for this.
Yes. Because it's just most books don't age super aggressively unless you like dump coffee on them or whatever.
Most of the grandmas behind the counter at the Goodwill does not know comics is actually expensive, so they go, I don't fucking know, $5.
Yeah,
get rid of this stupid thing.
Yeah, and this, I think cover price is like 15 or 16, and $4 for this was a steal.
Yeah.
It was a good, enjoyable read. It was like 30 minutes. Cute little thingy. What else you got?
Nothing. You gotta give me a question. I mean, I could shoot from the hip and review the Sandman, because I got like 2 issues left, but...
Wow. Wow.
You know what? I'm gonna I read the deluxe edition, volume 2 of The Sandman. That's how he says it in the Audible series. It starts out with Kitty. There's an issue where the kitties all escape all the houses and they worship the cat goddess. And the cat goddess says, I'm in love with the Sandman. And,
I mean, he does have the pointy hair.
Yeah. He got that anime hair. He does!
He does.
Kitty's good. And then, there's a family meeting called with all the Sandmen. And his sister says, Sandman, you shitty guy. You did something shitty to what should have been your wife. And he goes, wow, I didn't even realize that was shitty. She's been there for 1,000 years. I'm going to go save her. And then he goes to hell. And the Lucifer guy says, you know what? I give up here. And he gives Sandman the key. And then all the mystical powers on Earth try to suck Sandman's dick for the key to hell, and it really messes with his head, and he's gotta make a decision. And this was all really good stuff.
Okay. You need help.
I stopped taking notes. Because these retarded recaps are more fun, I think.
Well, you just described some of the best episodes of the TV series, so there is that.
Is season 2 of The Sandman out?
No. No, they're not even filming yet. It got delayed because of the strikes. Yeah.
I know they released the Kitty episode.
It was half the Kitty episode and then half the ex-wife episode.
Oh.
Yeah, it was one episode, but it was two stories.
That's messed up.
That was, like, so good.
The Key to Hell stuff took, like, this whole book, basically. It was 15-ish issues. It's a long time that this takes.
Yeah.
And I really like how long and hard he contemplates, like, the ramifications of giving away the Key to Hell. And who he's gonna give it to, and what does hell even mean? What is hell for? A lot of good philosophicals.
Wow. Average Neil Gaiman book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This makes me want to read actual books by Neil Gaiman. I listened to American Gods, and that was fine enough, but I want to listen to other things.
Yes. Dead good.
I think cover price is $30 or $40.
How many deluxes are there?
I don't know.
Wow.
I can find out.
You're supposed to know everything.
No!
No!
Wait, but
I'm going to say 10. Wait, no. Because there's 10 trades-ish. So it depends on whether the deluxes are just a deluxe version of the trade or if they're, like, more issues. Because that's always hit or miss. Big book.
3, 4, 5 deluxes.
Okay, so they're, like, the 10-issue ones. Big book. I do really like the re-release covers. I don't want to buy those versions because I like the leather-bound omnibuses better because they're amazing. There's also a version of that that's signed by Neil Gaiman. It's like silver and they only made like 100 of them and I want to find one. But
you ain't going to find that at a Goodwill.
You never know. But yeah, the re-releases lately have really nice covers. I think a lot of them are new covers as well.
Those covers?
Yeah. Those covers. And then there's the... I don't remember who's doing them, but I think they're new covers for the re-releases. I just don't remember who the cover artist is.
I'm going to give it 5 stars. 5 out of 5. Good stuff.
Wow, amazing.
Yep.
Neil Gaiman. Speaking of big hardcover books, I've been chewing away on this one for a while, so you're going to have to indulge me, Ligma. I read the Riot...
We are at 30 minutes in the, of the recording, and you're on the last topic.
We're going to make it 60, baby!
Let's go.
I read the Rise and Fall of the Batman Omnibus.
That's not how I thought you were going to end that sentence.
I mean, my dick did rise and fall a few times in this book. So this was...
The Rise and Fall of what? I'm sorry.
The Batman Omnibus.
Huh.
Rise and Fall of
the Third Reich.
No. The Rise and Fall of the Batman. So this was, it's a Detective Comics omnibus. This was written by James Tynion IV with art primarily by Eddie Barrows, Alvaro Martinez, Ben Oliver, and Marcio Takara. There's a few other people filling in here and there, but that's the majority of the big chunks of art. Mm-hmm. This is 934 through 981 plus annual one, and it also includes the entirety of the Monster Men crossover, which was like the first crossover of the Rebirth era for like the Bat Family stuff. So it's just that entire like trade basically is just kind of shoved in here. So it's the whole story. The main premise plot is that Batman wants to put together a team, which will later be known as the Gotham Knights. But he wants to put together a team of people to oversee Gotham and its surrounding territories.
I think you read Batman Incorporated.
No, I did not. Yes, he's done this a few times. But he wants to put together a team to oversee things. He foresees a war coming, a bunch of plot jargon. And he basically tells Tim, who is the current Robin, and Tim goes, yeah, actually, I have a plan for that. And then Tim puts together this, what we now is the Belfry, which has been used a lot lately.
Mm-hmm.
Just this whole other Batcave system that's in the middle of the city in a big bell tower, which is really fucking cool.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Tim has this big, oh yeah, I wanted to make a new headquarters. So he just kind of goes nutty and makes like the X Mansion, but like in a skyscraper. So they have a new base of operations in the city. He recruits Tim, Steph, who is currently spoiler, Cassandra, who is currently orphan, which I hate that name. It's so weird. I don't like that. I've never liked that. Cassandra Cain is great. I hate calling her orphan. Batwoman and Clayface, who is kind of reformed-ish. So they're working on that. He's our pet project for the whole thing. Eventually, they also team up with Azrael and Batwing. And then a bunch of plot stuff happens. So the primary arcs in this consist of a military-ish operation of bat people that are like learning. They take AI training videos and they learn how to be the best Batman. And they're all being trained by Cassandra's dad, who is like her Alfred, basically. It's a big surprise, and you know, he wants to finish the war that Batman started by like actually doing a war instead of just like, well, we beat up criminals sometimes. He wants to do the, and then we get the gyat and we go bang, 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 you know? So this was his big plan was to do that. So that's a big twist. It's eventually revealed that one of the big reasons why Batman wanted to put together this team was because he wanted to kind of take control of, or keep better tabs on Kate Kane, his cousin, Batwoman, because she's, you know, she go a little Joker mode sometimes. And he's like, you know, we both got problems, but you got more problems than me. I would know. So this is like, he wants to make like an outlet for her, kind of. It's really odd. There's a bunch of League of Shadows stuff that gets thrown in here. There is a new team of criminals called the Victim Syndicate, and they do the, but what if Batman stopped beating up the mentally ill thing? But then it also turns out that those mentally ill people are also kind of crazy. So there's a lot of...
Wait.
What
do you mean? Because that didn't make sense.
The premise of that arc is that there's a bunch of villains who are like, hey, Batman has fucked us up in this one way or another, or he's been the reason why we've been fucked up. Like, one of them is... got screwed up by Clayface, so she's also kind of like Clayface, but she's like ugly and stuff. And she's like, well, if Batman was never Batman, then Clayface wouldn't be Clayface, and then I wouldn't be like this. So like they all team up and they're like, you should like stop beating up people, and you know you've done us wrong, so we think that you should stop being Batman, take off the cowl, blah blah blah. They kind of take Steph. They kind of convince her of their aims for a little bit. They team up with Anarchy for a little bit because Anarchy is more politically aligned with them, let's say. There's a whole bunch of... It's a lot of plots in it. This is a lot of book.
He's hidden three bombs across the city.
Shut the fuck up. No. There are bombs in this book. but not because of him. And then the Monster Men crossover is literally like... Hugo Strange makes giant kaiju.
Makes sense.
Yeah, he's like, you know how I can... I'm mad scientist man, but what if I was mad scientist with a corpse? And then it turns into a giant bat that's the size of a skyscraper. It's not a really good event. The premise is funny. There's some cool art in it. There's a few issues done by Riley Rossmo. But, like, this event is a fucking mess to read. So not a big fan of that. Most of the art is pretty good. The art styles do change a lot between the different artists, so I kind of wish that they had planned out more similar people. It is some of the best Eddie Barrows stuff that I've read. He's still on my list, so I don't really like him, but sometimes...
That's what I thought. As soon as you said the name, I'm like, ooh, he doesn't like him.
Sometimes he has really good panels. It's more a matter of his faces are bad, and he has weird textures to how he kind of draws stuff. But sometimes he does, like, I don't know if it's an actual painting, but it kind of seems like a painting. Some of his panels are... really high effort, and those ones are really good. It's more like his action sequences look kind of sloppy to me. Mm-hmm. But this is definitely some of the best stuff from him for a lot of it. There's a big focus on Cass and Clayface during the second half of this book, because Clayface is like, but what if I am evil? And then Cass is all, nah, you're not. So because, you know, she has her whole I used to kill people all the time, I'm an agent of death type thing. So they have a lot of bonding. They do Shakespeare at each other, which is really funny. Like, Cass doesn't know how to read correctly. Like, because she just learned how to talk, she doesn't know how to read yet.
Shakespeare at each other.
Literally, though. Like, so she's trying to, like, another character critiques Batman as, like, this girl under your wing can't read yet. Like, what the fuck are you doing to her? You know? So then Clayface is like, no, well, like, you know, she'll help me recite my lines. It's really funny. So it's like to learn the meaning of how the words work instead of just like, I can write them. Like, uh-huh. to understand meaning, they start doing poetry. It's pretty cool. It's integrated really well in the run, actually. Tim dies, sort of, in this book pretty early on. It's a fake out, and then they don't come back to it for like half the run. So he just like stays dead. The reasoning for it doesn't matter because it has nothing to do with this run, which sucks. It has to do with the ongoing Brian Michael Bendis Superman run at the time, so that's not good. How traumatizing it is to the team is done really well, especially because kind of this project is like his brainchild. So when he comes back, he gets followed by a version of himself from a future timeline who is Batman and kills people, because of course. And it's actually really cool. So this version of Tim is like, you need to kill Batwoman before she starts killing people, because then everything's going to go to shit and you're going to become like Bruce and blah, 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 blah. It's very hammy, but it's pretty cool. There's a couple of Batwoman issues that were done with the art was done by Ben Oliver that I thought were a really good standout. Those definitely felt very hand painted esque. It goes into her backstory, her connection to Bruce, and how while she was kind of indirectly inspired by Batman, she's not like really a part of the Bat family dynamic because cousins, you know, uh-huh. She's a little different. There's also a really good arc with Azrael where he has the Cult of Saint Dumas, whatever the fuck, his brain worm, his, you know, I'm an angel sent by God bullshit, is like an AI program. So they give him a new AI program based on Batman, and then they put it in his head. It's really goofy. But him and Batwing have really fun rapport back and forth. They just like hang out and do stuff, and then they'll go on missions and take bets. They do the like Legolas Gimli shit where they're like, aha, I have 17. It's very silly. The totality of the run, once I finally finished it, it seemed like the biggest theme it was trying to thread through was the contrast between Bruce and Kate, whereas Bruce in this run is very self-aware of his own limitations and like, the things I do are not good and people should not try to be me, and I need to stop raising so many children to be me because my brain is broken in a unique way And that doesn't, you know, it doesn't mean that other people can't do different things. Like, typically, in my opinion, when Batman's written well, he doesn't always hate when other people are killing people. That's him overstepping his bounds, as he's like, no, when you're in my city, you're going to follow my rules. And he's like, he's just projecting his own shit out. And it's like, calm the fuck down. Like, other people have their own ways of acting, the other heroes and stuff. And I thought that that was done really well. The ending was a little anticlimactic, just the way everything kind of wrapped up.
Just like our shows.
True. This was $75. I got it half off of cover price during Jetpack's annual Christmas sale time, where they have like a bunch of old omnibuses usually are like half off of cover price or something along those lines. So it was really worth it. This thing is, I think, the biggest omnibus I own, or at least the second biggest. It's a big chunker. So well worth it. Kind of worth cover price. Good read. It was a good overall run.
Where did this fall in the timeline of runs? Who wrote the run before and after?
Oh, I don't remember.
What year did this come out?
So this would have been Rebirth. So this was about 2016 to like 2019 or so. So the New 52 Detective Comics run was a fucking nightmare of a rotating list of people, and mostly bad. So I think this was the first big chunk of like consistency it had. I think, I know Peter J. Tomasi, I think he might have done it before somewhere. I don't remember when, but I know he did it and it was received pretty well. There's this one. It's followed up by two more collected editions, which are, I think, kind of scatterbrained in the Rebirth era. And then the next big run was, then it was Peter J. Tomasi, and then it was Mariko Tamaki as the one who did it most recently or is still doing it right now. And both of those two most recent ones have been received pretty well. They're not really connected to each other. They're just like, but what if we did more Batman? But, you know, usually it involves more than just Batman himself.
Right.
Okay. So this is definitely good. It just, it doesn't require a lot of context, thankfully, to understand it. It's just a lot happens and it's a big book. It's not 100 issues of Sandman that are all planned out. It's like 8 arcs that are kind of strung together, which works well because James Tynan is a good writer. Just kind of flat out. It's felt like a good test run for when he would get the Batman book in a few years. So wicked cool. You know what else is wicked cool?
Having people that appreciate us so much, they throw us money sometimes.
Yes, I am a stripper.
Yep.
So we owe a big thank you to our patrons, Jeff, Lawrence, and Caitlin. If you want to help financially support this show, keep it on the air, keep food in our tummies, and beer in our hands, and lights and roofs over our heads and whatever, you can go to patreon.com/DimeComicBrosNetwork. Give us money. We have a bunch of different cool rewards, stickers, bookmarks, early and exclusive access to a lot of our content, art stuff done by Colin, whole bunch of stuff. We like money. We like your money. You specifically, whoever is listening right now, yes, you, I'm going to say your social security number.
And, no. Just his IP address.
1, 2, 7. Also, a thank you to our partners over at Jetpack Comics and Games in downtown Rochester, New Hampshire. Shop local, support your local niche businesses. Jetpack gets like a third of my paycheck, so I single-handedly keep them afloat. Yeah. The other two-thirds are just by, like, Pokemon cards. Tune in next week for the first half of the Guardians of the Galaxy by Abnett and Lanning?
Yes.
Yes. It's an omnibus. We're doing the first half because it's big.
Very big.
Very big. Tune in later for that and stuff.
And now for happy hour. Ha ha!